Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about the first major motion picture directed by the new producer-director of Star Trek Discovery, Olatunde Osunsanmi, The Fourth Kind.
Yes, The Fourth Kind.
Yes, okay. This is a movie which came out.
That's true. That is a factual statement.
I mean, yeah, you could say that it is a movie.
Yes.
Okay, it came out in 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was written and directed by Osunsanmi. It stars Mila Jovovich and Elias Koteas and Will Patton and other people. And would you like to give sort of a description of what this is?
I would love to. It is based on the true story of Nome, Alaska, where apparently there have been tons of unexplained disappearances and bad occurrences through time, and focused specifically on a psychologist who maintains that she has had contact with people and been affected herself by what is the fourth kind. Now, if anybody has ever heard of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the fourth kind is a purposeful allusion to that title. That the Close Encounters of the Third, she goes through it at some point in the movie, but basically aliens. But nobody believes you because there's never any like real physical evidence, and they can make things disappear. And of course, every time that a camera is ever trained on them, nothing ever shows up.
Now, yes, that is a description of the movie.
Yes.
But it goes way beyond that description into some very, very weird territory. And I don't know how much behind-the-scenes info you read about this, but I read basically everything I could get my hands on because it's fascinating and crazy what was going on in this movie.
The thing that fascinated, I did not read a whole lot about it, but I read enough to understand that this was sold to the audience in the very beginning. Mila Jovovich walks out and says, I'm an actress playing a role, but this is based on true story, and everything that's a dramatization, there's factual evidence backing everything up. And if you have an actress come out and say that to the audience, the first thing that happens is my warning flag goes up and says, baloney.
Okay, but the other thing that happens there, the other thing that she says is that, you know, this real person took video of her patients, you know, and has all this like stuff on tape, and that, you know, the director of the movie interviewed the woman and has acquired the footage, and that footage is interspersed throughout the dramatic recreation of these real events
in some very interesting ways.
And not only that, but, you know, it, because of that interview, we have Osunsanmi in the movie interviewing this real psychologist.
Yes.
Okay, so how much more, because I'm really curious, like, how much more do you know than what is actually in the movie?
I don't know much more than the fact that the entire time I was watching it, I didn't believe that a single thing in that was actual documentary footage in any way, and that the woman that was supposedly this psychologist was anything but an actress. And there, I mean, just everything about it, like, there was, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but at the time Blair Witch came out, there was this other movie that was, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was actually structured better than than Blair Witch. And the whole thing was, it was presented as a guy who was doing a documentary. And so they have an excuse to have him talking to the audience, narrating what's going on and saying, what I'm about to show you is actual documentary footage. But the whole, you know, and then the whole thing is revealed as, no, this was all made up as you're going along. So, I don't know. I mean, did people really believe that this was legit when it came out? I don't believe that.
Like, I mean, the way that it's told, like, you'd think, like, there's some sort of kernel of truth there, right? Like, I mean, because they say, like, I mean, first off, you've got Mila Jovovich, you know, coming out at the beginning saying, like, I'm Mila Jovovich. You've got the director on screen interviewing this person, and you've got, like, literally, like, you know, the real person and the actress, you know, and they do this weird, like, split screen thing where they'll show, like, the real footage with the dramatic footage and everything side by side, you know, and everything like that. And, like, the way that it's presented, like, they push that this is reality hard, right? And at first I'm like, okay, but then they do things where, like, there's times where it's like actual footage, you know, like actual 911 call, you know, and you start, like, seeing, like, well, okay, it says actual here, and on this part it doesn't. Like, this shot says real footage from inside of a cop car, and then there's another shot which doesn't say that, and you're like, oh, do they fake that one, and is that one real or whatever? And, you know, the lines are so blurred, and as far as I can tell from what I've read, like, this movie is 100% fake.
Yes.
Like, there isn't even a real psychologist by this name.
That doesn't surprise me at all. No, I mean, the artifice of it shows through in the fact that it, you know, to speak to your point about, like, oh, what's real, what's not, is it, if there was this much documentary footage of these events, this movie would not have been the first time that I would have heard about it, or that you would, you know, like, this would have been something that everybody would have talked about before the release of the film, where they would have said, oh my gosh, that crazy story. Did you see that 9/11 footage? Did you see that? It works too hard to try to sell its premise.
Yeah.
And that whole split screen thing is novel in the beginning, because you're like, okay, you're setting the tone here so that what I can expect is a recreation. But then it sticks with it through the whole thing to the point where it becomes distracting and annoying.
Well,
because
even,
it's like, just commit to one way or the other. You've got the footage, do a documentary or tell a movie.
They push it so hard. I mean, having that thing at the beginning, and it's so dramatically done that at first I'm like, you know, because I heard complaints that like people, you know, who like families of the victims were very upset by this movie, by the way that it faked, you know, footage and stuff like that, and tried to pass it off as real. And like, just hearing that, like, going into it, I thought, like, oh, you know, that is kind of weird, you know. And like, as you know, I was watching it at first, I was like, okay, so this is real, this part is real, and then that, you know, picture is fake. And I can see how they'd be upset by that, because they're showing this guy, like, dying in like a, you know, a faked video or whatever. But then the more I started to read about it, it's like, no, really, the story is like a bunch of people disappeared in this small town, and it seemed like an unusual proportion of people, but most of them were found dead in the woods or something, because it's freaking freezing up there. And,
yes,
you know, basically these are people who were intoxicated and froze to death, you know, like, that's the majority of these cases. But there's, you know, still like 9 people who have never been found, you know, but there's
probably eaten by something.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no reason to suspect that it was aliens who took them or anything like that, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I guess I can understand why the families would be upset by this, but at the same time, aside from it being like, well, there's a lot of people who have gone missing in this particular town, like, there's really no connection to reality beyond that, you know? Like, they're not using names, they're not using anything. So, I mean, that to me, I mean, there's a lot of movies, you know, which are way, way, way closer to reality in their, you know, fictional depictions of, you know, events, which I could see being way more offensive than this. Maybe it's just the fact that this movie tried to push so hard that it was real, but it's not like they were using, you know.
Well, I mean, it's upsetting on principle that you're manipulating somebody's tragedy that is directly relatable to a real town / situation.
I guess if it is
it's completely fabricated, which mm-hmm. it is, why not set it in a fictional town and say it's in Alaska, but we're not going to tell you what town this is based on.
Yeah.
The fact that it used a real town to try to sell it is where I can understand why a family living there would be like, hey, this is tough. You don't need to drag us into this.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're making a movie. Don't, you know, that is really, you're stepping in a territory where it's uncool. You know, like, that's not cool, man.
I guess I can see that, you know.
The thing is that the movie would have played better if they had just committed to, you know, this is inspired by true events, and instead of trying to do the fake documentary footage, just have a movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's enough to make you say, ooh, okay. That's the ultimate selling line to get you to play along.
Yeah.
The Doors by Oliver Stone is based on true events.
Right. Or even like the Mothman prophecies is based on true events, you know?
Right.
And that is, you know, I mean, I'm in 100% agreement with you. I had the same exact reaction when watching this, which is just like, you know, the documentary footage is done so badly,
yes,
in a sense, that I'm just constantly taken out of what may or may not be a decent story every time you try this gimmick, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. Like the regular movie stuff is pretty decent, you know? I mean, like, the people who they get, you know, to be the real people, the quote unquote real people, they are not good actors.
Well, I think that they make a classic mistake of saying don't act too much,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, that's, I guess, a poor direction to give to an actor. Like, a lot of times with an actor, you have to be pretty specific to say, this is specifically what I'm going for, sell me on it, instead of saying tone it. Like, it really seemed like the direction was just pull it back, just don't rehearse it, just let it happen. And that can sometimes produce what you see here in this movie. But they do have, and this is, I think, the really, you know, frustrating thing about the fact that the gimmick doesn't work, is if they had committed to a movie and just done a movie, they have good actors in this.
Yeah, like everyone who's like the you know, fake people, like Mila Jovovich and Elias mm-hmm. Koteas and Will Patton and everyone, they're really solid, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. It's it's very strange. It's a very strange movie, and I understand what they were going for, but they just push it way too hard. And it's, you know, it's like one of those things where it's just like, you know, someone's like, it's real. Believe me. It's real. It's real. It's real. And it's like, why do you keep on repeating this? You're going to make me start to believe that it's not real. And it's not.
Well, I think, looking at it, like, for me, it became interesting to watch strictly because it really is a textbook study in where you can see the idea and somebody saying, I've got a really interesting way to put it together to sell it, to to take the structure in a different way, to say there are a lot of found footage movies. Let's do it in a different way. Let's try to do a spin on this. And so I give credit for that, because it's obviously an idea that he had, where he said, here's the thought, we're going to do found footage, but we're going to blend it, and then we're going to lie to them outright, and we're going to be clever about it to try to fool everybody. And So the concept, it's really interesting to watch from the vantage point of seeing how a concept can't, you know, sometimes a concept is a really good concept, but it's just not the right time or the right way to execute it at this point.
Yeah. And is it, I mean, this has been done before in kind of a weird, different way. I mean, if you think of like, you know, Rescue 911 or any of those types of shows, dramatic retellings of real events.
That's true.
Is that In Search Of, wasn't that right? In Search Of was just like kind of like a documentary thing.
Yeah, that was just documentary type stuff. But the thing is, this is more like Hollywood Babylon with Tony Curtis, which was on VH1, if I recall correctly, in the 1990s. Did you ever watch Hollywood Babylon?
No. Every time you say Hollywood Babylon, I think you're referring to the Kevin Smith Ralph Garman podcast, but which I do listen to, which is good.
No. Hollywood Babylon was a television show with Tony Curtis inexplicably wearing leather gloves as he talked about the different legends of Hollywood.
That's kind of ominous. I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, it was a real treat, man. It was. Yeah. I mean, it was a TV show that I watched because it was so reliably bad. I was like, yeah, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
But that is sort of where this finds itself. And what's doubly frustrating is there are like, Elias Koteas, he does a good job with his role. Everybody does a good job with their role. Like, it's just so frustrating that you see this hint of a good movie sitting in there.
It looks good. You know, I mean, the photography is really nice. The editing is interesting. I mean, they're trying a lot of things, you know, that don't work, but, you know, they're trying. And it's just kind of like crippled by this weird. I mean, I give them credit for trying something new, but it doesn't work.
I think that the biggest thing that blows it up right out of the gate is having Ossin Sonmi in the movie.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw him on screen, it was like that was the final chance of me ever believing any of this was real evaporated in that moment.
See, like, to me, I was like okay with it because for one thing I was like, this is cool. I was getting to see, like, you know, Ossin Sonmi on screen. Hey, this is our guy, right? This is cool. You're gonna get to really see him and, you know, see how he is as an interviewer and whatnot. But he is not a good actor. That is true. He is a very not good actor. But part of it, I think, is also the editing. Like, there's a lot of times where, like, you know, the real psychologist will be telling her story, and then it will cut back at the most random times to the most random reaction shots of him as he's just like, interesting. Or my favorite, like, let me write a note down on this piece of paper.
Yes.
It's like, what are you doing? It does not work. It does not work. And like the graphics on screen are like,
yes,
you know, it's got his name in the background, like
presented interview with. Yes.
Because like the premise was that it was supposed to be, I read this whole story, like, because it's like Chapman University, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I think is in California, right? I guess. Yeah. Anyway, that's where he went to school. And apparently, like, the idea behind that footage is that it's supposed to be, like, broadcast on the school, like, you know, local acts, you know, public access channel or whatever. Mm. And the reason why, like, it has that the logo and everything was because basically he went to the school and said, like, hey, I'm making this movie. I graduated. You know, hey, Chapman, you represent whatever. Can I, you know, use the school logo on here and, you know, just as a nice little nod to my education and stuff. And they're like, yeah, that's cool. You know, they like read the script and whatever. Right. And like the footage had already been shot, you know, and they're like, yeah, you know, and then like I saw like an interview with like the, you know, publicity department of the school. And they're like, to us, it was obvious that this was a War of the Worlds type of thing, you know?
Right.
And we thought like, that's cool, whatever. They're like, but we kept on getting calls after the movie was released from journalists and other people just saying, like, do you have, like, the uncut interview? You know, do you have any more information on this woman?
this would also speak to me about some of the angry reaction to it, would be people embarrassed that they may have fallen for it.
I guess that could be it too. Yeah.
Because nothing will anger somebody in quite the same way as them finding out finally that they didn't get the joke.
Mm-hmm.
Like you and me, we can watch this and you know, somewhere between the first, you know, 120 seconds and 800 seconds, we've both said, okay, this is, yeah, all right, I get what you're doing here.
Yeah.
But if somebody goes all the way to the end, to the point where they're like, do you have the uncut interview? And then they do digging and they find out that they just fell for it. It makes a person feel a little gullible.
I guess,
you know, they get upset with those things.
I guess that could be, you know, I mean, like the person that, you know, at the school who said this, they're like, you know, the weird thing about this is like these people who contacted us, like they had to do some digging to get my phone number. You need to go right through the website and everything. And they're like, why wouldn't they just go to like IMDb and find out instantaneously that it's not real? But, right, you know, I mean, whatever. It's strange. But, although the credit of people who were duped, I guess from what I understand, like Universal went above and beyond in terms of like they went so far as to create a couple of fake websites which had like articles about this woman in an effort to try to create like an online presence for this fictional person. So much so that they actually published a story which supposedly came from a real Alaskan newspaper, and the newspaper got mad and sued them and forced them to
rightfully so, Mike. Rightfully
yes.
So.
I agree. But you know, I mean, that's how far they were trying to push the reality of this thing. But it's the pushing of the reality which sort of makes the reality fall apart. I mean, the found footage movie has become its own like subgenre. And, I mean, yeah, it was unique when Blair Witch came out. That was like a big thing. And you know, anyone, you know, if you ask them outright, like, hey, is this fake, they'd be like, yeah, just don't tell anyone, you know. But and they right, like for like the first couple months or whatever, they kept the stars out of like all the press and stuff like that. They had that special on the Sci-Fi Channel, The Curse of the Blair Witch, which honestly I believe is better than, you know, the movie itself. But now, yes, it's become like a thing, like to the point where, like, you know, I've talked to a number of young ones who have, you know, sort of grown up on these movies, and like when the sequel to Blair Witch came out, you know, this summer, they're like, what is this? You know, I've heard of this movie, I've never seen it. Oh, it's just like all these other movies. And it's like, no, guys, all those other movies are just like this, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, trying something new with it is interesting, but it's also, it doesn't work. And I'm wondering if like audiences have become desensitized to the found footage movie to the point where you have to have Mila Jovovich get up before the movie and say, all of this is real. I know that I'm a fake person, but all right of the other things are real, you know, just so that people have a chance of believing that it's real.
Yeah, There are better ways to sell it even than that. And I think that also, I mean, you know, as we're talking about it, I think that the funniest thing, and I'm probably, somebody's probably made a movie like this or is about to make a movie like this. We're possibly in an era where we've become so desensitized to the found footage movie that something real is going to happen and nobody's going to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's basically the found footage movie is The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
Yeah.
And then like aliens are going to show up next year and be like, hey, what's up? We're going to eat y'all. And we're going to say, yeah. This is some publicity stunt and we're going to be eaten. Maybe it's, you have to find the Leonard Nimoy.
Maybe.
Like, you need to have somebody who has so much authority and respect going into it that it transfers onto the story. Maybe that's the key.
Yeah. And I mean, it's weird. It's weird what people believe and yeah, what they don't believe. And I'm curious as to like the reaction, but I don't know. I mean, I wonder, like, were people who thought it was real outraged, or was it the people just who you know live in the town, you know, like you were saying, who are,
I think,
like,
both. Yeah. I do. I think both. I think the people living in the town had a right to be outraged, and then I think that there were probably people who fell for it, and then when they found out it was fake, they got upset. But it's, and I think that UFOs definitely inhabit a territory where people really want to believe that they're there.
Oh yeah, we're all Fox Mulder.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's really a, it's just, you know, it is. It's a thing. And it's, you know, this movie, again, it's not a good movie, but I have to give him credit for trying something new. You know, yeah. It's one thing to make something the exact same way everybody else is making it and have it flop. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to say, I'm going to go for broke and it doesn't work. I can respect going for broke and it doesn't work because you went for broke.
Yeah.
It's okay to fail. You're going to learn from it and carry that forward and say, this is what doesn't work and I can refine my style and make it better because of it.
Yeah, you know, I kind of had an opposite reaction, but like sort of ending up in the same place when I first saw Memento, where I was like, you know, everyone's like, this is one of the best movies ever made. And I'm like, eh, it's cool. And, you know, people are like, I can't wait to see Christopher Nolan's next movie, you know, that sort of thing. And my thinking was like, well, he found a gimmick that worked. And, you know, that's what this movie sort of relies on. I'm very skeptical that if he were to make just a straight up regular narrative, that he would actually have the talent which he would, you know, demand out of a feature filmmaker, you know? And then he made Insomnia, and I'm like, okay, yeah, he does have that talent. That's cool. Good. So,
yes.
Nice to see that he's a real filmmaker.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, okay. The thing is, that's a dangerous trap. I almost went into one of my Nolan love poems, but I won't this time.
I'm totally on board with Nolan love. You know, I mean, he's never made a movie that I haven't liked aside from Following. So, but, you know, with looking at this movie and thinking about like Ossin Sanmi as a director and having seen, you know, an episode of Falling Skies and everything, I kind of have, you know, sort of like the opposite reaction that I had with Nolan, where it's like he's trying something here, but the problem with the movie more than anything is the gimmick. You know, if the gimmick in Memento hadn't worked, would that signal that Nolan was a bad director? Mm. No, you know?
No.
So I want to see a movie that Ossin Sanmi has made, which is more straight up, you know, it's just like a standard narrative. And he's made a couple. He made The Cavern, which is a horror movie, and he made this movie called Evidence with Radha Mitchell, which actually seems to share some thematic similarities with this. I watched the trailer for it. Basically, there's like a, I don't know if it's like an explosion or what, but there's an incident which occurs at like a gas station where basically a bunch of people are killed. And there's video footage from various sources or whatever. I could be getting this wrong. I'm just getting this from the trailer, which have been recovered. And basically the guy, I think his name is Stephen Moyer. He's on like Vampire Diaries or something like that. I don't know. He and Radha Mitchell like reconstruct the footage in an effort to reveal what occurred at the incident, you know, which sounds like that's a really cool premise.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting in that it's, you know, but it's not done like it's reality, but it's still, you know, dealing with that idea of like, here's videotaped, you know, records of an event, you know?
Right. Right.
I don't know. I'm curious to see that movie. I think I'm going to check it out because it looks interesting.
I think we'll check it out, Mike.
All right. That sounds good. Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in the meantime, it's been fun talking about The Fourth Kind today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit. the ultimate fantasy was being called the ultimate fiasco, the ultimate fallacy, the ultimate F-up. And one girl on Sunday afternoon, she tells a story. They were walking to dinner, and she says, "Oh my God, you guys." They were talking some of these, you know, snarky names. She goes, no, you guys, listen. We've just survived the Con of Wrath." And they all, like, died laughing.
Warp 5.
At that time, you know, PTSD was not even a diagnosis. We had, for generations, had different terms to describe issues with soldiers. Soldier's heart, you know, combat fatigue, shell shock.
Melodic Treks.
I have a big love in my heart. You know, like, my top three episodes are Where No Man's Gone Before, Believe It or Not, The Alternative Factor, and The Lights of Xatar.
I just almost passed out.
Meta Treks.
For me, just as soon as Quark goes under the knife, kind of...
It is not essential Trek philosophy.
Something seriously goes wrong. Not for me, no.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel and Jeff Sutter. Thank you very much for helping us out, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we'll come right up. So we have a new review on iTunes today.
Yes, we do, and thank you very much. It's a 5-star review from Alexander Gates. Titled Behind Trek, says Stage 9 is a Star Trek podcast focusing on the behind-the-scenes creators of the various shows. Each episode offers spotlights on directors and actors, or delves into ensemble and news. What will the new show feel like? Let's analyze the creators' past works. It is thoughtful and well-researched. That's obviously directed to you. Episodes are short, which allows them to get into detail on more topics. It's a great show for any Star Trek fan. Wow. Thank you very much, Alexander Gates. That's
Really appreciate it. If you want to be like Alexander, go over to iTunes and leave us a review, and we'll read it on the air. All right.
Mike will research it.
Yes. So John, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, just look for Kessel Junkie. I'm out there like the ghost of Tom Joad. You can find me on KesselJunkie.com. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And you can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, over on the Nerd Party Network with Matthew Rushing. And you can find me co-hosting another podcast over on the Nerd Party Network called Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And Mike, I think you might be able to tell us a little bit about Great Shot Kid. When you tell people where they can find you online.
Yeah, it's a show just like this one, only we talk about Star Wars instead of Star Trek. On tomorrow's episode, we're going to be doing a triple feature where we look at the first films directed by the sequel trilogy directors. So go ahead and check out that show. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where we do audio commentaries and various other things I need to get on top of that. We got 2 episodes in the can. You know, there's probably an episode out there right now where we talk about Get Out and Logan, and then we've got a commentary for X2 coming out. So head on over there and check out that show. And you can also find me on the Talk Film Society, talkfilmsociety.com, I guess is the website, where I do a show called Soderbergh 2828, where we look at every single movie that Steven Soderbergh has directed leading up to his new movie, Logan Lucky. And this week we just discussed his reset movie, Schizopolis. So head on over there and check that out. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right, well, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to take a look at an early comedic role by William Shatner in the feature film Loaded Weapon 1. Thank you.